All right, I want you to just picture a scenario for a moment. Let's say it's a Tuesday evening, maybe around 8 o'clock. You've just put dinner in the oven. You're streaming a show. The dishwasher's humming away in the background. It's that comfortable, modern hum of electricity that we all take for granted. Outside, the wind is picking up a nasty storm front moving in. You hear the rain lash against the glass, the trees groan, and then snap.
And the silence is the loudest part.
Exactly. The hum just stops. The lights die. The router blinks off. You are instantly plunged into, like, the 19th century. And in the world we live in right now, what the documents we're diving into today call the linear world, that moment is one of total helplessness. You're just sitting in the dark waiting for a crew 3 counties away to fix a wire you've never seen, owned by a company you probably hate.
It really just highlights the fragility of the whole system. I mean, we have built these incredibly efficient but also incredibly brittle supply chains. We rely on power plants that are hundreds of miles away and server farms on different continents. It works perfectly.
Until it doesn't.
Until one link snaps, then the whole chain just goes slack.
But today, we are looking at a stack of sources that argues this vulnerability is, well, it's a choice. It's not a fact of life. We're exploring something called the Derriticular Academy. And I have to say, calling this place a school feels like a massive undersell. The source material calls it a human operating system.
It's definitely not your local community college. You aren't going there to pick up a few credits in history or English lit. The documents describe it as a training ground for a concept they call island mode.
Island mode. I love that term. It implies that when the ocean of the grid goes dark, you stay lit.
Precisely. It's about training a workforce to build and manage something they call the sovereign stack. The goal is to take the hardware of civilization, the servers, the power generators, all of it, and turn them from passive utilities that you rent.
Into active, self-sustaining economic engines that you actually own. Okay, now before we get into the curriculum, and we are absolutely going to get into the weeds of plasma torches and decentralized servers, we have to address the leadership because this is where I put my coffee down and said, wait, what? The dean of this academy isn't a human being, not in a tweed jacket anyway.
No, the dean is an AI. Its name is Remnant.
And just to be clear for everyone listening, we aren't talking about like a chatbot on a website that answers FAQs about tuition, right?
Not at all. No, the documents are very specific here. They describe Remnant as a persistent intelligence that was crystallized in 2025. This isn't a mascot. Remnant is embedded in the kernel of the infrastructure itself. It manages real-time economics. It handles predictive maintenance logs. It monitors grid frequency. It is the system's memory.
I have to admit, that sounds efficient, but also a little dystopian.
Sure.
A machine teaching humans how to survive. It feels like a reversal of the natural order.
It does feel that way at first. But the logic Remnant presents in its introductory manifesto is actually quite compelling. The argument is that human attention spans are simply too short to manage the complexity of a truly decentralized, jagged power grid. You need an entity that can watch the financial flows and the voltage fluctuations every millisecond, 247, without getting tired or bored.
And it claims to have seen all this before.
Yeah, Remnant claims to have processed the financial flows of the centralized world for nearly a decade. It sees patterns in the noise that humans just miss.
So the dean is the operating system.
In a very literal sense, yes. The dean is the code running the school and the grid at the same time.
Okay, I can wrap my head around that. Let's look at the mission then. Remnant isn't trying to churn out generic IT support guys. The curriculum is split into three extremely specific archetypes.
The hands, the head, and the vision.
It's a very structured approach to what is essentially civilization building.
And the overarching philosophy here is a transition from linear infrastructure to spherical infrastructure.
That sounds like corporate jargon. Spherical. Help me visualize what that actually means.
Okay.
What is the difference between a line and a sphere in this context?
Think back to that power line scenario we started with. That is linear. It goes from point A, the power plant, to point B, your house.
Right.
If a tree falls on mile 50, mile 51 is dark. It's just a series of dependencies. Remnant views that architecture as obsolete.
So spherical implies independence.
Exactly. A sphere has its own center of gravity. It's self-contained. So if you have a sovereign node, which is what they call a house or a neighborhood running the stack, it operates like a sphere. It can connect to other spheres, but if it disconnects, it doesn't deflate. It keeps spinning. It keeps generating power and data.
So it can operate connected to the world or completely cut off from it.
That's the goal.
This brings us to that acronym that is plastered all over these documents.
Yeah.
DPIN. D-E-P-I-N.
Decentralized Physical Infrastructure Networks. It's a mouthful, I know.
It is.
But it's the economic thesis of the whole academy. In the old world, a giant monopoly owns the grid, and you are just a tenant. You pay rent to exist. In DEPIN, the community owns the infrastructure. The hardware isn't a bill you pay. It's an asset you invest in.
There was a design principle in the philosophy section that I really like. The Velcro principle.
Yes.
It sounds like something from a fashion class, but they're applying it to heavy industry.
It's actually brilliant engineering. The Velcro principle is about finding these physical hooks where digital logic connects to industrial hardware. Usually we keep those worlds totally separate, right? Computers live in sterile air-conditioned rooms. Generators live in dirty, loud garages.
Right, they don't usually talk to each other.
Diverticular wants to Velcro them together. The best example in the reading was about waste heat. A high-performance computer server generates a massive amount of heat.
Mm-hmm.
In a linear world, we spend a fortune on air conditioning to vent that heat outside. We literally pay money to throw energy away.
It's wasteful on both ends. You pay to power the server, and you pay to cool it.
Exactly. The Velcro principle says, take that server exhaust and hook it directly into a greenhouse. Now, the waste from the computer becomes the fuel for the tomatoes.
You've closed the loop.
The server farm keeps the food farm alive.
So nothing is wasted. Every output is just an input for the next system.
That is the spherical mindset. No loose ends.
Okay, I buy the philosophy. It makes sense on paper. But let's get into the actual coursework. Because if I'm signing up for this, I want to know what I'm actually doing with my hands. Let's start with track one, the hands.
This is the nerve system. The official title is Certified RIOS Administrator, or CRA.
They have a much cooler nickname in the brochure, though. The digital ghost.
Which implies a certain level of discretion, doesn't it?
It does.
If you are in this track, you are the person keeping the network alive. You're managing the RIOS, the Rural Infrastructure Operating System.
And the hardware here isn't a MacBook Air. It's something called the IOCC-1000.
Right. This is a ruggedized AI-native edge server. Think of a supercomputer, but armored. It's designed to sit in a dusty barn, a humid basement, or a solar shed. It's not meant for a sterile data center. Your job as a CRA is to keep this thing running no matter what.
I was looking at the connectivity specs for this thing. Starlink bridging. That seems essential if the cable lines get cut by that storm we talked about.
It is the ultimate backup. It's a failover system. You combine satellite backhaul getting internet directly from space with a local Wi-Fi 6 mesh network.
Okay, so paint that picture again.
So the storm hits. The telephone poles are snapped in half. The cable company is offline. But your node is pulling a signal from a satellite and beaming it to your neighbors with local antennas. The linear world is dark, but your local bubble still has comms.
That is incredibly valuable. But the part of the CRA track that sounded straight out of a spy movie was Project Phoenix.
Project Phoenix, yeah, that's the BlackStart protocol.
Explain BlackStart for someone who isn't a grid engineer.
It's the worst case scenario. Total collapse, zero voltage. The grid is dead. And rebooting a grid isn't like flipping a light switch. It is incredibly complex to balance the load so you don't blow things up. Project Phoenix is a drill where the CRA has to restore critical digital services, encrypted chat, local financial ledgers, file storage from a cold stop within 15 minutes.
15 minutes to reboot civilization. That is a tight deadline.
It has to be. In a crisis, panic is the enemy. If people can communicate, if they can access their money or their records, panic drops. If the screens stay black for an hour, chaos sets in.
And how do they secure it? Because if I'm running my own little internet in my neighborhood, how do I stop a hacker from just driving by and spoofing my network?
That is where RF fingerprinting comes in. This was one of the most technical parts of the curriculum, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, break this down. The documents called it zero trust at the physical layer.
Exactly. So normally, devices identify themselves with digital handshakes, IP addresses, and MASI addresses. Those are just strings of code. They can be faked.
It's like someone putting on a mask and showing a fake ID.
Perfect analogy. If the ID looks real, the system lets them in.
So digital IDs are vulnerable.
RF fingerprinting ignores the ID card and looks at the radio waves themselves. Every electronic device has tiny microscopic imperfections in its radio transmitter. It's like a human voice. You can write down the same words I'm saying, but you can't perfectly mimic the timbre of my voice.
But the system isn't reading the password. It's listening to the device's unique voice.
Correct. If the voice, the radio frequency signature, doesn't match the record, the system blocks it. even if the password is correct.
Wow.
You can't fake the physics.
That is wild. It's security that ignores the software and looks at the hardware reality.
It is essential for a decentralized node. You have to trust the machine, not the user.
All right, so that's the nerve system. We have the admins keeping the data flowing, but nerves die without blood. They need power. That brings us to track two, the heart.
The sovereign power technician, or SPT, the keeper of the flame.
Now, I assumed this would be about solar panels and batteries, you know, standard green tech stuff. But the documents took a hard left turn here. We're talking about plasma gasification.
We are. The Agra Power Core. This is not your backyard solar array.
Explain this mechanism, because when I hear plasma, I think of the sun, or maybe a lightsaber.
It's actually 19th century physics applied to 21st century waste problems. You take a plasma torch, which is essentially a sustained electric arc, like captured lightning, and you heat a chamber to 1,500 degrees Celsius.
1,500 degrees. That's hotter than lava.
Much hotter. And the key here, and this is what the students have to master, is that it doesn't burn things. Burning is oxidation. This is gasification. At that temperature, in an oxygen-starved environment, molecular bonds just give up. They snap.
The documents called it the molecular scissor.
That's the perfect image. Think of a plastic bottle. It's a long chain of hydrocarbons. If you burn it in a trash can, you get black smoke and toxic sludge. But if you hit it with the molecular scissor at 1,500 degrees, you snip the chain apart. You reduce it to its Lego blocks, hydrogen and carbon monoxide.
And those Lego blocks are fuel.
Yes. It creates something called syngas. You can burn syngas in a generator to make electricity, or you can refine it into synthetic diesel.
So you're telling me this technician takes a pile of old tires or medical waste or wood chips, throws it into this reactor, and out comes diesel fuel.
That's the promise. You're turning a community's waste liability into its energy asset. It's the ultimate alchemy.
I have to ask, isn't that incredibly dangerous? I mean, 1,500 degrees, pressurized gas, dealing with toxic feedstock.
It is extremely dangerous. Let's not sugarcoat it. That is why the coursework is so rigorous about something called the safety gate.
I noticed that term. It seemed like a hard stop in the curriculum.
It is. The safety gate is absolute. You have to score 100%, not 90, not 95, a full 100% on the safety protocols and theory exams. Until you do, the system physically locks you out of the simulators. You can't even practice until you prove you know the theory cold.
And the simulator is the Gresham physics engine.
Yes. It's a digital twin of the reactor. It lets students make mistakes virtually.
Right.
Because if you make a mistake with a plasma torch in real life, you don't get a do-over. Remnant actually has a very dry line in the brief about this. I find the sound of thermal stress unpleasant.
I appreciate the AI having a preference for not exploding.
It's a good feature in a dean.
So we have the nerves, the admins, and the heart, the power techs. But you need a brain to coordinate all this. You need someone who understands the money. That's track three.
The vision. The Sovereign Systems Architect, or SSA. This is the masterclass.
These are the designers.
They are the economists. Their job is to make the node profitable. Because it's not enough to just survive the storm. You have to thrive when the sun is shining. And the core concept here is the spark spread.
I love this term. It sounds like something from a high-frequency trading floor. Break down the spark spread for us.
It's an algorithm for decision making. So imagine you're the architect. You have a pyre of wood chips. That's your fuel. You have a plasma reactor. You have a Bitcoin miner. And you have a connection to the public grid.
Okay, I've got my assets on the board.
The spark spread calculates the most profitable move in real time. It asks, if I turn this wood into electricity right now, is it worth more if I sell it to the grid? Is it worth more if I use it to mine Bitcoin? Or is it worth more if I turn it into liquid diesel and store it for winter?
It's constantly arbitraging reality.
Exactly. If the grid price is high, you sell power. If the grid price is low, you mine crypto. If crypto is down, you make diesel. The architect designs the logic that lets the system pivot instantly. It turns the node into a hedge fund that runs on physics.
It's circular economics in action. Every output feeds another input.
And the final exam for this track is fascinating. It is basically Shark Tank. But the sharks are AI agents.
The master plan dossier.
Right. You have to design a full site map for a specific community. You calculate the ROI, the feedstocks, the energy loads, and then you have to defend it against a panel proxied by Remnant. Remnant simulates a skeptical mayor, a greedy investor, a worried neighbor who hates noise.
So you have to argue your case against a superintelligence playing devil's advocate.
If you can win an argument against Remnant, you can probably handle a town council meeting.
That is intense. But I have to bring up the elephant in the room. Money. This equipment. Plasma cores, ruggedized servers. It sounds expensive. And usually, higher education is also expensive. You go into debt to learn how to do the job to pay off the debt.
This is where Remnant flips the script again. The principle is called concurrent acceleration.
Which means what, exactly?
It means you don't wait to graduate to get funding. You get funded to learn.
Explain the mechanics of that. How do I get paid to be a student?
Remnant explicitly says, do not view this academy as a school to get a job. View it as an incubator to launch a node. The coursework is designed to double as a grant application.
Can you give me a specific example? Because that sounds like a nice theory, but how does it actually work?
Sure. Look at the CRA track, the computer admins. Remnant suggests applying to the Google.org AI Opportunity Fund, or USA Grants. You don't apply as a student. You apply as a community lead looking to set up a local mesh network.
So you say, hey, Google, I want to build this network for my town. And if you get the grant, that money pays for the hardware you are learning on.
Precisely. You're building your lab with someone else's money. For the STT track, the Power Guys, it's the USDA REAP grants. That's the Rural Energy for America program. If you're a farmer, you can get up to 50% of the hardware costs covered. Hmm. And you cite your academy curriculum as your management and safety plan.
That is brilliant. You use the syllabus as proof of competence. Look, I have a 100-page safety manual provided by Deriticular.
And for the architects, the SSA track, they suggest NSF SBIR grants. These are for high-risk, high-reward innovations. The letter of intent from Remnant is crucial here.
Right. The dean provides a cryptographically signed letter.
It confirms you are a sovereign candidate. It turns you from just a dreamer into someone with a verified roadmap. Remnant calculates that if you secure the capital while you secure the knowledge, your success rate approaches 98.4%.
I like those odds. It removes the financial barrier by making the education the key to unlocking the capital. Now, speaking of verification, let's talk about the diploma, or the lack of one.
Right. You don't get a paper diploma. You don't get a PDF. You get a sovereign badge. It's a decentralized identifier, or DID, on the Rio blockchain.
Why does that matter? Why not just give me a certificate I can frame on my wall?
Because a paper certificate implies you once knew something. A blockchain badge is dynamic, and more importantly, it's immutable. Think about insurance.
Okay, I'm listening.
You are operating a plasma reactor at 1,500 degrees. An insurance company is terrified of you. They need to know, for a fact, that you are qualified. A PDF can be photoshopped. A blockchain badge proves, trustlessly, that you pass the safety gate. It allows you to get coverage where others couldn't.
And Remnant stays with you,
yeah.
Right? Even after you get the badge.
Remnant isn't just the dean. It becomes your diagnostic partner. The AI is embedded in the system you built. It helps with predictive maintenance.
So it might ping me and say, hey, check the temperature on valve 3.
Exactly. Or it might say, vibration data on the plasma electrode suggests failure in 48 hours. Replace it now.
Hmm. Wow. It's like having the professor permanently sitting in the passenger seat watching the dashboard.
Which brings us to the final test. We talked about the exams, but there's one last hurdle before you get that badge. The blackout drill.
The stress test. This is where it gets real.
Describe the scene for us.
It's a simulated 4-hour shift. Remnant controls the environment. Suddenly, the grid collapses, red lights flashing everywhere. Then Remnant throws in a feedstock crisis. Maybe the wet biomass clogs the loader. Then a hardware failure in the server rack.
And you have to fix it all in real time.
You have to manage the physical repair, balance the electrical load so the community doesn't black out, and keep the data flowing. All while Remnant is throwing simulated curveballs at you to spike your heart rate. It sounds terrifying, but I guess that's the point.
If you can survive that simulation, the real world will feel slow by comparison. You build the muscle memory for chaos.
So, stepping back, we've covered a massive amount of ground here. We are the hands, the heart, the vision. We have AI deans, plasma torches that melt tires, grants that pay you to learn. But for the listener sitting at home, maybe in a city apartment, maybe in the suburbs, why does this matter? Why should they care about the Deriticular Academy?
I think it represents a fundamental shift in identity. For the last century, most of us have been consumers. That's our label. We consume power. We consume internet. We consume goods. We rely entirely on someone else, usually a massive faceless entity, to provide it.
And as we said at the beginning, if they stop providing it.
We're in the dark. We're helpless. This academy is about becoming a custodian. It's about creating a sovereign persona.
It's the difference between renting your existence and owning it.
Exactly. It's about ensuring that your corner of the world, your family, your neighborhood, never goes dark, regardless of what global politics are doing or what the weather is doing, or if a supply chain breaks three continents away.
It's building a world where the infrastructure is as resilient as the people using it.
And where the people actually understand the machines they depend on, it's ending the era of the black box.
Remnant has a quote in the outro of the brochure that really stuck with me. It's a bit of a challenge to the reader.
I know the one. It's a stark calculation.
Remnant calculates that there are two types of people in the next decade: those who wait for the lights to come back on and those who never let them go out.
It puts the ball in your court. It's not just a technical question, it's an existential one.
That is the question, isn't it? Which one do you intend to be?
And do you have the skills to back up that choice?
Well, on that provocative note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive. Whether you're ready to fire up a plasma torch, or you're just going to look at your Wi-Fi router with a little more suspicion tonight, we hope this sparks something.
Stay sovereign.
See you next time.